The Hand of Aphrodite. Bound fast on the golden throne, Hera howled with rage and frustration. Neither her power nor even that of Zeus himself had been able to release her from its curse. How could she invite the immortal world to a feast in which she sat pinioned like a criminal in the stocks? It would be grotesque and undignified. She would be laughed at. What magic was at work here? Who had done this to her? How could she be released from the spell? The hapless Zeus, bombarded by a shrieked fusillade of questions and complaints, turned to the other gods for help. Whoever managed to release Hera, he proclaimed, could take Aphrodite's hand in marriage, the greatest matrimonial prize there was. Ares was loudly annoyed by this peremptory decree. Was it not understood that he was to wed Aphrodite? "Calm yourself," said Zeus. "You are stronger than all the other gods put together. Your union is safe." Aphrodite was confident, too, and pushed her lover forward with encouraging words. But none of Ares' pulling and pushing and kicking and swearing had the slightest effect. If anything, it seemed that the more he strained, the tighter the throne's hold on Hera became. Poseidon, despite already being attached to Amphitrite, made a spirited attempt that likewise came to nothing. Even Hades rose up from the underworld to try his hand at freeing Hera from her increasingly embarrassing predicament. All to no avail. As Zeus himself tugged frantically and uselessly at the arms of the throne, enduring yet more insults from the humiliated and enraged Hera, a polite but insistent cough cut through the commotion. The assembled gods turned. In the very hall of heaven, a gentle smile on his lopsided face, stood Hephaestus. "Hello, Mother," he said. "Having problems?"
"Hephaestus!"
He limped forward. "I understand that there is some sort of reward?" Aphrodite looked at the ground, chewing her lip. Ares growled and started forward, but Zeus held him back. The other gods parted to let the ugly little creature hobble through to where Hera sat, imprisoned in her throne of gold. At one touch of his fingers, the arms of the golden throne swung open, and Hera was free. An important principle is demonstrated here, one that we will encounter many times. No god can undo the spells, transformations, curses, or enchantments of another. Hera rose to her feet, adjusted her gown, and straightened herself in a manner that told the world the whole situation had been under control all the time. Colour flew to Aphrodite's cheek. This could not be. It was a moment of sweet revenge for Hephaestus, but his essential good nature kept him from gloating. Despite, or perhaps because of, the pangs of rejection he had endured all his life, he was motivated not by anger or resentment, but only by a desire to please, to make himself useful and give delight. He knew that he was ugly, and he knew Aphrodite did not love him. He knew that if he claimed her as his prize, she would betray him and slip often into the bed of his brother Ares, but he was simply happy to be home. As for Hera, rather than acknowledge that she had been paid back for her cruel and unnatural betrayal of the maternal instinct, she maintained a dignified and frosty silence. Secretly, the better part of her was rather proud of her elder boy, and in time she grew genuinely fond of him, as did all Olympus. Hephaestus would make gifts for Aphrodite and for all the gods, and prove himself a worthy member of the 12. He was given one whole valley of the mountain for his own forge. It was to become the greatest and most productive workshop in the world. For assistants, he chose the Cyclopes, themselves craftsmen of the highest order, as we have seen. Anything Hephaestus did not yet know, they could teach him, and together, working to his designs, they would fashion remarkable objects that would change the world. Hephaestus, god of fire, and of blacksmiths, artisans, sculptors, and metalworkers, was home. His Roman name is Vulcan, which lives on in volcanoes and vulcanized rubber. Vulcan, the planet, and its people, notably Commander Spock, are not connected, so far as I can establish. The Romans sometimes referred to Vulcan as Mulciber, in recognition either of his power to soften metal for working or his ability to soothe the anger of volcanoes.